Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your money when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Vladimir Deese, and welcome to another Class War Battlefield podcast. It's snowing outside. Did you realize it? Man, neither did I. Snowden, my people. Snowden. It's weird, some of these names. You know, the people who release information to the public. Snowden. What's a den that protects from snow? Quite interesting, huh? Either way, I want to dedicate this to my friend Jerry. He knows who he is. Jerry and I were talking. Jerry and I do a lot of talking. Jerry's a very right-winged individual. And I'm not ideological at all. You know, I pride myself on being conscious. There's times when I take a, what some people have called, liberal position. I didn't even know what a liberal was till I went to college. First time I was ever called a liberal. Now, what does that tell you? What does that tell you about education? You know, the first time I was ever called a liberal. Before then, you know, in my community, people didn't tell me that I was a liberal. They just said, "Wow, you sound different. You have conviction." They didn't tell me I was liberal. Even people who watched Fox News didn't tell me I was liberal. Actually, most of them just told me, I was against the country. I love that one. But I'm not liberal. You know, like I said, I used to be a socialist. Socialism isn't going to help us, so I've abandoned that. I'm not an anarchist, even though there's some interesting stuff with anarchy. So I'm really moving towards just being conscious, because when you become conscious, ideology falls away. And this is the reality, you know. I've never heard one person say, "We're going to raise ideology." Think about that. You know, I've never heard a person, especially, you know, you look at some of the greatest sages of the world. They've never said, "I'm going to raise ideology." And that's one of the biggest misnomers with religion. It's when people start talking about theology and blah, blah, blah. You know, theology is great. You can spin theology 50 different ways from Sunday. But what about consciousness? What about consciousness? Why isn't it that churches talk about conscience? Why is it not that, you know, synagogues and mosques talk about consciousness? And apart from even consciousness, you know, you can't, and I know, I'm off on a little bit of a rant right yet, but, you know, I'll get back to the main subject. But you can't have consciousness and segregate it, or segment it, you know what I'm saying? You know, you can't have Christ consciousness any more than you can have Mohammedan consciousness or Muhammad consciousness or Buddha consciousness. You know, consciousness is consciousness. When you reach a point where your mind hits consciousness, when you reach a point where your heart reaches enlightenment, right? When you reach a point, even when your soul becomes fired by empowerment, you become one with everything and with every person. So, yeah, Christ still exists. Muhammad still exists. Buddha still exists. You know, the indigenous gods and goddesses still exists. But they are puzzles to a broader peace. And when you start to realize that, and you allow yourself to meditate on it, you know, it's not about the Bible just, you know, it's not just about the Bible, I should say. It's not just about the Quran. It's not just about, I've never been able to pronounce it, and I'm not going to try now. But Buddhism has a great book. And the last word is Gita, and I know that, but I never can pronounce the first one. It starts with a B. Or even the Hindu book. You know, it's not just about that. It's about humankind. So, when I look at things, I try desperately to look at them from a conscious, really objective, and I probably shouldn't say objective, because I don't even like that word. That word is kind of, it's been twisted and manipulated and twisted upside down. You know, a great example, I was listening to Alex Jones. I don't listen to Alex Jones much, but I was online and I found a clip that I wanted to listen to. And so I listened to it. And the word objective, right, has been so manipulated by even people like Alex Jones. You know, he was talking about the fairness doctrine and how, you know, if the government was to reinforce the fairness doctrine, then it would, you know, it would allow for greater propaganda. Okay, wrong. The fairness doctrine impacted mostly what one would call liberal and left individuals. You know, the amount of propaganda since the fairness doctrine has been repealed since the 1980s has dramatically increased. And so the word objective is kind of the same way. People use it against the thing that it's meant to actually promote, which is a sort of intellectual, emotional disconnectedness so you can see. Not just from a viewpoint, but like I continue to say to people, from a vision point. So you can see not only in front of what it is that you're talking about, or in front of the subject, but you can see from every side. And so this is how I try to approach things. I try to weed out problems in the arguments. I try to weed out problems in statements that people are saying, including my own. You know, there's times when I've written things and I've said things and I've looked back or I've listened to them and I said, oh my gosh, that was a horrible argument. Actually, I did one of those this past weekend. You know, word to the wise, never argue when you're sick. and I did that. And it was horrible. It really was. I looked back and God, there just nothing flowed and I should have just left it alone. I was that sick. Anyway, so Snowden. Let's talk about this for a moment, okay? When my friend, you know, I wrote a message on my Facebook page about Snowden, and it was one. A statement of disgust towards Barack Obama. Anybody who still can like the, you know, still likes this man, they're unconscious. They're unconscious. their head, it might be said, is stuck in the ground. So that was the first thing. That was the first, you know, I put that statement up there. And then I made a statement about Mr. Snowden and Mr. Assange, Julian Assange and Snowden. And I said, you know, these individuals shouldn't be on the run. They should be involved in a parade in this nation. Absolutely involved in a parade. They have done a great service to humanity by revealing exactly how absolutely corrupt our government is and the corporations that either serve it or control it. And a friend, Jerry, sent me a message. Basically telling me that Mr. Snowden should be hung as a traitor. Actually, he didn't basically tell me that. He told me that. And, you know, my response to that was one of shock. I didn't expect him to go there. Jerry also had included a critique, which I openly admitted. Hey, I can't take anything away from that. How Mrs. Snowden had released information to the Chinese. And I said, yeah, you know, that was definitely wrong. He should have not did that, but, you know, I know why he did it, but it was still wrong. You know, he did it so he could get away from China. Which, may I just say, you know, as Jerry pointed out, and as another individual pointed out, who, what's his name? Oh, can't think of his name right now. But I have an article where early on in the Snowden case, this guy wrote this, Dave Emery, there he goes, Dave Emery wrote this article which said that he felt that Eric Snowden, who appeared to be a supporter of Ron Paul, was working to destabilize the Obama administration. And it was pretty convenient that Snowden had went to China first and was probably going to release secrets on how the U.S. was spying on the Chinese. And now it appears, even though Russia is denying it, it appears that Snowden went to Moscow but couldn't get into Moscow and is now probably going to leave Moscow for Cuba or someplace else. It's crazy, you know, how much damage this man is doing. I can't deny that. But at the same time, as I pointed out in my other post to Jerry, Mr. Snowden did release to the American public the realities of a monster that was growing up around it, even though the American public didn't seem to notice or care. Actually, that's the funny thing about it, is the media, and this is not something that I talked with Jerry about, the media has made this about Snowden. They have not yet made it about the program. It's been all about Snowden's actions, not the government's. It's a great avoidance tactic in deflection, in diversion. It's a great tactic of diversion. Instead of looking at the accusations, instead of asking, wait a minute, what is this government doing? What are these corporations doing? Instead of doing that, we're going to attack Snowden. But back to the conversation. I told Jerry, openly admit, I said, look, I can't take anything away from the China thing. It's absolutely, that was wrong. But, Snowden did, of course, release this information, and because he is a whistleblower, whistleblowers have done this before. One of the arguments that Jerry made was Snowden had no right to do this. I said, yeah, actually, he did. He did have a right to do this. Considering Obama's and the government's recent history on coming down on whistleblowers, it's unlikely that even if Snowden had went through the, quote, proper channels, he would have gotten fired. Not only would he probably have gotten fired, but Lord only knows what else would have happened to the man. One of the reasons why he's been running, I told Jerry, is because he's afraid that he would be tortured like Private Manning. I mentioned Private Manning in my original post, too, that Private Manning was a hero. Jerry had a problem with that. I believe Jerry's former military, so, I can understand his problem with that. But like I told him, Jerry, of course, suggested that Private Manning, Bradley Manning, should be hung as a traitor. And, I pointed out Private Manning didn't release anything that was damning to the United States. It was embarrassing, yes. But he didn't release anything that was damning to the United States. In fact, and this is one thing I didn't point out, the papers shouldn't even have been classified. They were just embarrassing. That's the only reason why they were classified. Because they proved that what the Pentagon was telling the American people was wrong. The Pentagon was telling the American people that X amount of people were killed, civilians were killed in Iraq. The papers that Bradley Manning released proved, once and for all, that the Pentagon was lying. They knew of dozens, hundreds probably, of incidences of civilian casualties that would have inflated the number of civilians killed. They knew it. So, the conversation that Jerry and I had ended with me saying, something, man, you're right. Let's hang them all as traitors. Let's take all the people who the right wing thinks of as traitors and let's just hang them all. Viva la corporate government fascism. Hell, we're almost there anyway. Might as well go all the way, right? And this really is what is at stake, people. Now, I'm going to say something that's going to sound really weird, but hear me out. Over the last couple of days, I've been listening to, wait for it, David Icke. Yes, that David Icke. Now listen, ladies and gentlemen, I've been going through a transformation over the last couple of years. And if you had told me, seriously, if you had told me 5 years ago that I would be listening to David Icke, I first heard about David Icke about 5 years ago, I probably would have laughed so hard that I might have had a heart attack. If you had told me 2 years ago that I would be listening to David Icke and actually agreeing with some of what he said, again, I would have probably laughed so hard my brain would have fallen out my eyes. It's an interesting trick. I don't know if it's ever been done, but whatever. But I listened to a couple of his major, huge speeches over the last couple of days. And, like I said, I believe some of what he says, mainly because I've been going through this transformation. And only when you get into a major spiritual transformation can you understand what I mean. And a lot of people are going through that transformation. My transformation really started a couple of years ago when I began studying Martin Luther King. 2011 was a big year for me when it came to King. I started listening and reading and contemplating and meditating on some of his finer points. And a lot of these points had to do with love and empathy and things like that. David Icke talks a little bit about that. And I'm going to tell you, right now, mankind, humankind really, is at a severe crossroads. And I mean, we are at a severe crossroads. We have two ways to go. And unfortunately, we're already pushing dramatically towards one way. And people are so unconscious that they don't even know that we're pushing that way. And that is really a corporate fascism, the likes of nothing we've ever seen. You know, when I was listening to his speaking, David Icke said something very odd, which began me thinking, and it connected me to Snowden almost immediately. He said, the Fourth Reich isn't coming, it's here. And suddenly, my mind popped open. Hitler called his German apparatus the Third Reich. Why the Third Reich? Why not the First? Where was the other two Reichs? How was the other two Reichs? What were their built? What were their institutions? Were they still existent when Hitler came into power? Now maybe I need to read Mein Kampf. Maybe it's in there. But my mind popped open with that question. If this is the Fourth Reich and that was the Third, what were the other two? And how do they play into the fact of the, you know, that this apparatus has been evolving? Excuse me. We're at a spot, ladies and gentlemen, where we are pushing dramatically one way, and that's towards this fascist government. I don't know if it's going to be global. My feeling is, you know, I've been, back in the spring, I started listening to some London School of Economic lectures. And one of the interesting things that you find when you listen to London School of Economic lectures is the amount of global governance you find there. Now again, if you had said to me 2 years ago, Vladimir, in 2 years you're going to be talking about global governing. Again, I would have laughed so hard my brain would have fallen out my ears. I know, I said eyes last time. But I there was no way I could see it. But when you start to listen to London School of Economics, and London School of Economics holds a lot of sway. London School of Economics is like the University of Chicago when it comes to economic influence. And, of course, Harvard and Yale economic influence in America. London School of Economics actually influences many of the commonwealths, or former commonwealths in any way, of the British imperial system, or so I've read. But the amount of global governance talk there, and the amount of people who are for global governance, it's frightening to me. It really is frightening, but it's real. But it's very real. Very, very real. I don't know if the system's going to go global. My feeling is, and this is where I get off the path with David Icke, is the people who want a global governance have either underestimated the will of the people. The people aren't just going to be drug into it. Or they've overestimated their ability to control nature, because nature seems to be getting progressively out of control. I'm going to take a break. When I get back, more conversations on Snowden and global governance. Hope you're still with me. This is Bob Nerdy's. Recording this episode to listen to Democracy Now, and this week is the week when Snowden is being pursued to the ends of the earth, and so I figured Democracy Now would have at least some information about Snowden. I was absolutely right. And I was absolutely wrong. They had quite a bit of information, very little about Snowden, but more revelations, not necessarily from Snowden, but a article came out about persecution, unknown persecution, of individuals within the government. Something did come out which was amazing. Snowden told a reporter, I'm trying to remember what country it was from, I believe it was in Russia, that he had actually taken the job at the, I forget the company that he worked for, in order to, uncover widespread government corruption, or just government corruption. So, you know, he went in with this under his shirt. He knew he was going to do this. Well, here's the thing about that. I think Mr. Snowden just proved himself guilty of espionage. I don't believe he should be brought up on those charges, but by admitting foreknowledge, which is, you know, it contradicts what he originally said to Glenn Greenwald. You know, he said to Glenn Greenwald that, you know, he didn't really say anything about him beginning to work, but he said that, you know, he was seeing this stuff happen day in and day out sitting at his cubicle. And you know, he kept saying it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong, and then he made the decision to do this, to come out and to do this. I'm sorry to say, but, you know, I think he just shot himself in the foot. You know, that doesn't stop me from saying that it was, that what he did was a good service to the people of the United States. But, you know, this is a very complex issue now for me, because Snowden did exactly what you would expect somebody to do. It's not stupid. He goes into the government. He's going to uncover, his desire is, of course, to uncover wrongdoing. So he collects information that's along that line to release to the American public. And of course, he had to figure that, you know, when he finally came out and exposed the information, he would need some insurance that would enable him to pass freely from nation to nation. This is where it gets complex. Because, or this is at least where it becomes complex, because he then had to knowingly find information of U.S. Wrongdoing in relationship to certain countries. China was the first. I have no doubt that he's going to release information to the Russians. I'm going to be shocked if he doesn't. He actually said, and this was reported on Democracy Now!, that he planned on releasing more information to other countries about United States wrongdoing. You know, I'm reminded of what Dave Emery said about this being an attempt to destabilize the Obama administration. Think about that. This is going, depending on how many other countries Mr. Snowden hits with this information, this could completely torpedo Obama's reputation overseas. Completely. Completely. And I mean, you know, truthfully, his reputation isn't that big anymore anyway, but this could be absolutely devastating. So, you know, Mr. Snowden gets his insurance, you know, releases it to the Chinese because that enabled him to leave China. You know, it's funny, the Chinese said, yeah, well, he left, but how about this? We want more information on what you've actually been doing to us. So now the U.S. has to, you know, solve that problem. Well, assuming the same thing happens with Russia, you know, the United States is accusing Russia right now, or is pressuring Russia right now to capture Mr. Snowden, which, you know, could happen, but the Russians are saying he never actually entered Russian territory. You know, he was never allowed to, you know, basically get out of the boarding area of the airport. I don't believe that one moment. I absolutely don't believe that one moment. I'm pretty confident, you know, he's in a safe house probably somewhere in Russia. And he is getting ready to hand over some information that's going to allow him to leave. I mean, it's just what it is. You know, I'm hoping, you know, he says he's getting ready to go to Cuba. I can see that. And I'm hoping he makes it there. Because after hearing what happened to Bradley Manning, nobody should have to go through that. Nobody should have to go through that. Nobody should have to go through that. Anyway, what else did the Democracy Now! Reveal? And this is the big, this is huge, actually. Democracy Now! Revealed, and I think it's from a McClashy. I never can say that. That's another one of those words that it just doesn't roll off my tongue right. I think it's a McClashy, though, publishing. The Obama administration, which I knew they were just horrible anyway, but, you know, to what extent, I didn't know. And, you know, it's disgusting, truthfully. They have implemented a program in the government to keep an eye out for whistleblowers. An eye out for whistleblowers. What am I talking about, right? They are forcing government employees to watch their fellow workers and to turn anybody in to supervisors who demonstrate what's called suspicious behavior. You know, I'm later on, I'm going to attempt to hopefully find this article. And, you know, if not for this broadcast and for the next one, which I'm prepping right now, the next broadcast, which will probably take place in a couple of posts, is going to be huge. I'm not probably going to play a lot of music, and I'm not going to do a lot of beginning comments, or I'm not going to have a lot of opening comments. I'm going to jump right into clips. I have at least 2.5 hours worth of clips. And my goal then is to, instead of playing a lot of music, is I'm going to find articles, and in between the clips, I'm just going to read the articles and maybe make a few comments on what's going on in between the clips, and then just continue on, because there's just so much going on here. And there's a feeling that I've had that something is about to break. The government is cutting services to the general populace. Sequestration, as they call it. It's bull crap. They're cutting taxes for rich folks and for corporations. They've basically taken the United States Bill of Rights and shredded it right in front of the eyes of Americans. Rather, it is the Second Amendment. I still believe local governments and municipalities should have the right to limit the types of firearms in their jurisdiction, but I do not believe the federal government should be making that decision unless the federal government, as they ban certain weapons for the civilian populace, they cannot, or the extended arms of their power cannot use those weapons either. So if people can't have semi-automatic guns out on the street, police or military personnel can't have those type of guns. If people can't have shrapnel-laden missiles out on the street, then guess what? The military shouldn't be able to have those either. Neither should the police. So, you know. But the government, they're doing all this stuff, and people are getting angry. And there's a part of me that wonders, you know, all across the world, we're seeing other people rally together. Except in America. That can't last too long, guys. That cannot last long. That cannot last long. You know, I had a weird thought the other day. And you're probably going to think this is weird, too. We're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. Now, last year's 1-year anniversary, nothing really happened. The government knows that there's going to be unrest. They're not stupid. There's places in the country which I'm hearing reports of, I don't know how true it is, that they're, you know, cities that are experiencing moderate blackouts. I don't know how true it is. I've heard it. Michael Rupert, some other people, you know, talking about it. I don't know how true it is. I know in the area where I live, we used to never have this problem, but we're getting flickers a lot. We're getting a lot of flickers. A lot of flickers. And we're not just having it in the summer. We're having it in the, I experienced it in the winter and in the spring when electricity consumption wasn't that bad. You know, there's been problems already with food. Lord only knows what the crops are going to look like this coming up fall with the very unpredictable weather that's been happening throughout this nation and other parts of the world too. people aren't going to take it. I mean, budget cuts are leaving everything from schools shuttered to, you know, desperately needed programs shuttered. I mean, the Republican Congress is talking about cutting food stamps. Right now, if it wasn't for food stamps, I think it's what, almost 50 million people wouldn't be eating? I mean, it's crazy. So I had this thought. The government wants to discourage people from getting together, right? They want to discourage people from getting together. What is the best way to do it? What is the best way to do it? You take a person who looks very average, who looks very ordinary. You know, these people are used to doing this. And then you craft a story. You craft a story. And then you put them out. You pick a reporter, whether that reporter knows it or not, and you put that person in front of that reporter and say, I have leaked documents of this program, this very wide-ranging, intrusive program. This program that touches everybody. Now, president doesn't have to know about this, indeed. You can utilize it to, as David Emery said, destabilize the administration, or maybe slap the president back into position if he was starting to kind of waffle a little bit and wanting to do his own thing. This isn't getting Obama off the hook, people. I'm saying something, you know. This is a thought that I've had. So then you take this guy, you get him out there, and what do? You want people to remember what he said. So you don't prosecute him. Oh no. Mm-mm. You do exactly what they did in the 60s. With Lee Harvey Oswald. Let him run. First to China. Destabilize the relationship between China and the United States. Then to Russia. Then to Lord only knows where else. But here's the thing. It's not the run that you want people worried about. Oh no. You want them debating on whether or not it's constitutional or it's a positive or a negative for the government to be doing what it's doing with the spying. In this way, the spying gets into their mind. So that, let's say, 2 months later, after everything's probably died down a little bit, if they're thinking about protesting, or even 6 months later, they suddenly start thinking, well, damn, if I send an email or make this phone call or this text message to somebody who, you know, telling them that I'm going to be, you know, organizing this this protest, or I'm going to be going to it, they're going to have all that information. Damn, they're going to know who I am. I'm not really comfortable with them knowing all of that, so I'm not going to protest. I'm not going to go. Indeed, I'll tell you this, ladies and gentlemen. Another crazy thought I've had. You know how the Occupy movement has been pretty much neutralized? I started thinking about that. If this program has been working for the last I don't know, 5-6 years, 10 years almost. What do you think the NSA did when the Occupy movement began to flare up and really take root across the nation? They combed the data. This is why so many, this is why I believe so many of the, and maybe I'll be proven wrong, could be, or how many of the documents that were sought directly after the Occupy encampments were broken up. I think this is why a lot of them were blackened out. Government didn't want people to actually know how they were breaking these things up. The police went after the occupations with a strange amount of determination and yet specificality. Yeah. Either way, they were specifically looking for something. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you. But people didn't think about why. You know, they assumed it was DHS. But nobody thought it was NSA. NSA goes back and it combs. It starts combing through data. All right? They've been collecting it. So they start combing through data. And they start putting together a tree. And they figure out, as you know, with data, here's a great thing if you don't know about data. And you'll see this when I post the special NSA audio clip show coming up. You can tell a lot from just data. And with enough data, especially of a group of 200-400 people and enough people looking through it and sifting through it, you can tell who the ringleaders are within that group of getting them to actually do something. You can tell where the power centers lie. And so, just like you're fighting a war, and, you know, the NSA has, you know, Mr. Snowden, whatever his motives, has shown the NSA to be at war with the American public. Moreover, when you the Democracy Now! Piece that I was just listening to shows that even the Pentagon is seemingly at war with the American public, even though we've assumed that for a long time. But like a war, these instruments of the government, these instruments of Wall Street, because really, you know, that's that they're an extension of Wall Street's power. They can then look at all of that data, and they can punch holes that dissolve the organization. And that's what I believe they did with Occupy. They not only neutralized various points of contact, but, and this was something that I picked up from listening to Occupy the Hood, many prominent people who had been down there received jobs in some organizations. They received jobs. And, you know, this was something that I had heard about early on in the occupation anyway. One guy, he was a computer tech guy. He was unemployed, but he was helping out. And some guy was passing by, seen him, started talking to him, and said, oh, well, you know, come by my business and, you know, we'll get you hooked up. Think about that. You know, there's many things about Occupy that I'm not happy with, but, you know, it is what it is. But so, I don't know if you know it. I don't know if you feel it. I don't know if you, you know, comprehend it. But ladies and gentlemen, we are at we're being warred against. We are being warred against. You know, people are, the government is literally starting to war against its own people. And this happens. This happens when governments begin to lose legitimacy, and I don't say that lightly. One of the things that has become apparent to me, and it's tragic that it almost took me 2 years to see this. If you go back and you read the Occupy Wall Street, I believe it was September 30th declaration from the New York General Assembly, it's very broad and very unspecific. Well, okay, it doesn't have specific ends, but it doesn't have specific goals. It just has kind of a declaration of grievances, to be honest with you. And if you look at it, as I did, you notice something very strange. The number of problems on there need remedies, but you haven't heard the Congress or the legislation offering any remedies. The government isn't functioning. And, you know, as an extension to what I was talking about with global governance, it was a desire by the neoconservative movement of the 80s to break government, to completely break it, basically hollow it out. And I'm sorry to say, but I think they've actually succeeded in doing that. The government's not functioning. The government is not functioning. And it has proven itself, unfortunately now, to be an extended organ of Wall Street. Now, I'm in belief that the government's always kind of been an extended organ of Wall Street and the powered interest. But there was a brief moment when there was a fight against it. That was back in the 40s and early 50s. There was a brief moment when there was a fight towards a better society where corporations didn't rule everything. That was in the 50s and 60s. And then it went back. It swung back. Barry Goldwater seems to be the beginning of that swinging back. Richard Nixon helped it along a lot, bringing into existence an interesting police state. The CIA and the defense mechanism after and during World War II, along with the intense amount of propaganda to bring the citizenry into consumerism, also seems to be, you know, major contributing factors to the swinging back of corporate power to that position of prominence within the government. I mean, like I said, it's always been there, but there was a time when we were kind of fighting it. The government's not working. And, you know, Obama just recently decided that he's going to finally get to doing something about climate change. You know, it's the emergency of this generation. Okay. You know, if this is how the government deals with emergencies, I don't want them anywhere near me when I have a heart attack. Or should I say, if I have a heart attack. It's funny I say when. But If it takes if he's now getting to what is considered the an emergency for this generation and for the coming generations, and it's 2013, he's been in office for what, almost 6 years. What kind of emergency is that? I'll tell you what kind of emergency that is. That's a non-prioritized emergency. Let's talk about a real emergency now. Police state emergency. The NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act of 2011, was passed unceremoniously in 2011, December 2011, right after the Occupy Wall Street movement started really flourishing and after it was, you know, broken up significantly. And as Chris Hedges points out, you know, it's frightening. You know, I've read bits and pieces of it, and it's frightening. It basically makes a police state more likely than unlikely. And that was an emergency. It passed quickly. There wasn't much debate on it. And it was implemented without people even thinking about it. That's an emergency. That's a power elite emergency. That's a we are the 1% emergency. The 99% emergency of global climate change, of global warming, whatever you care to call it, well, that's not a elite emergency because, well, we have money and, well, they have money and they can protect themselves. So it's not really that big of a deal for them. Moreover, there's some people who are under the opinion that the global 1% want to, how do you say, kill a large, significant portion of the population. Now, this is another one of those things that if you had told me 2 or 3 years ago, I would have laughed so hard that my brain would have fallen out the back of my head. Yeah, I know. Eyes, ears, not the back of my head. Come on. I'm having fun. But there is some intriguing evidence that suggests this is indeed true, including the role of Monsanto. Monsanto was connected to eugenics. You know, this is something that is not conspiracy theory. This is well researched and discovered. Even, you know, Bill Gates has made some very strange comments about the world population and the desire to have less people. There's just so much going on. And sooner or later, you gotta wonder if there's a broader plan. You know, if there's some end that the majority of us don't see or don't want to see. Why in the heck would the NSA, which supposedly is supposed to protect the Constitution, why would it collect every single communication of every single American? Hell, even just, why would it collect every single communication of 100 million Americans? Why store all of those communications in a big database? It's to the point where I'm starting to wonder about the agenda. And like I said before, if you listen to global governance proponents at the LSE, the London School of Economics, One of the things that I heard one of them say, can't remember which one, it's been a few months since I've listened to the lecture, was people are afraid to give up control of their ordinary lives. Governments are afraid to give up control of their internal issues. You know, their domestic issues in the domestic bodies of people. Well, they're going to have to, was the answer of this person. And one of the reasons why the global governance system isn't working so well, he said, is because people aren't willing to give that up. But they're going to have to. I nearly fell out of my chair when I heard that. The man was openly advocating the subjection of the average person to a global, non-democratic. He tried to say it actually is pretty democratic. It's not democratic. There's a big difference there. Get to that in a moment. But this undemocratic body. What's the difference between democratic and democratic? I've been trying to figure this out for quite some time. And I heard, you know, I'm a person who loves words. And David Icke was the one who opened me up to this. I forgot what word he used. But as soon as he used it, he used the word tick at the end of it. And he goes, what's a tick but something that gorges itself on a host? It's a parasite. And he might have actually used the word democratic. But democratic comes from two words. Absolutely, democracy and tick. Democracy is ruled by the people. It's popular rulership. A tick is an insect or a parasite that gorges itself on the body politic. We don't need a democratic society. We need a democratic society. Now, what's the difference? What's a democratic? I see, if memory serves me correctly. Well, instead of just allowing my memory to speak, I went to my dictionary, and ick, which is a suffix, the definition is of, pertaining to, like, consisting of, etc., or that which is indicated in the root. So, we need a democratic democracy, complete democracy, society, and we need organisms and organs which speak to that truth. Right now, we don't have that, and the global governing, unfortunately, even at the United Nations level, which is, it's funny, okay, the United Nations is supposed to be a democratic organism, right? And let me tell you, when I first heard about this idea of global governance, God, man, I want to say it was 2004, 2005. And everybody kept saying, every time when I heard it, it was always the same thing. Oh, the United Nations, the United Nations, the United Nations. I'm like, but the United Nations is a democratic organism. Or institution. I call these things organisms, by the way, because they do shape and they grow and they mature, and a lot of times they degrade because they don't understand the idea of being mature without growing or contracting. So, but I couldn't see it because I didn't understand the concept between a democratic and a democratic institution. And the funniest thing with the United Nations is, the United Nations has never been about democracy. Mm-mm. Actually, the United Nations has been about maintaining the imperial structure that was being lost, or it was foreseen to be lost, after World War II, in 45, 46, 47, 48, we knew that there was going to be a rash of independence, and they knew it back then, and I don't know why I said we, but they knew back then that there was going to be a rash of independence, and they wanted an organization that was going to be still run and controlled by the Western civilization that had initiated imperialism. And so the Security Council, which now does include, China and Russia, kind of enables the main powers to still rule over the rest of the world. If it was truthfully democratic, the Security Council wouldn't have that kind of power. One. Two, the people who go to the United Nations to represent countries are not chosen by the people. They're chosen by the government. And by an extension, places like in the United States, those people could be easily chosen by corporations and then moved into the government. This is the reality. This is the reality. Do I believe that the United Nations has a global governing plan? Well, people have uncovered things like the Agenda 21. And, that is a United Nations document. And it does speak about global governing, among other things. Knowing how desperate Western civilization, meaning Europe and the United States, how desperate they are to keep power rested in those hands instead of allowing power to go to the people who are the majority. The majority of the people of the world are colored. Are either black, brown, red, or yellow. Not white. Not white. And seeing how desperate they are for that. Yeah. I could absolutely see the global governing being a part of that. And in order to keep global governing under control, you got to have security forces, you got to have a way of dragnetting everyone's communications, things like that. I mean, it's just what it is. But I don't believe people are going to do it. I don't believe people are going to just, lay down and let it happen. I've been waiting for something to happen. I don't believe it. Then again, I'm an optimist. With the blood in the ink of the headline. All right. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can contact me at classwarbattlefield@live.com. With much love, my people. Take care of yourself. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs on the radio, talk shows, and the TV.
hear one thing again and again, how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and there are lives in the balance.
Thank you.